Good morning, everyone. My name's Ed Caso. If we haven't met yet, I do IT services, and included in that, I have the honor of covering IBM. With us today, we have Mark Foster, who runs the Global Business Services, or GBS, part of the firm. About 25% of the total revenue,
yep.
But has its fingers involved with so much more than that, right? Just being a key sort of front end. We have Eric Smith here in the front row. Eric, put your hand up on the IR front to help us out as well. Mark, I met you when you were one of the big dogs at another major firm that starts with letter A. Went into retirement after a great run. What brought you back to IBM? I mean, what challenge did you see?
Well, as you say, I did have 27 years at the place Accenture with the starts with an A, and retired in 2011. I had 5.5 years of, frankly, blissful retirement. I can absolutely recommend it. It's a fantastic thing. But during that process, I did make the mistake of being on the board of Hydrogen Struggles, which unfortunately meant that their search people could find me a bit too easily. And one day I was approached with an opportunity to take on this role. And the thing that really intrigued me and made me give up my, frankly, rather pleasant life was the fact that I could see another inflection point taking place. I could see that this proliferation of technologies around AI, IoT, automation, cloud, digital, all kind of coming together to create another entire wave of change for clients and organizations. And it just seemed like too much fun to miss out on. And also I could see from my conversation with Ginny that IBM had a lot in terms of capability around all the three, digital, AI and cognitive and cloud, and could I be part of bringing that to bear? And also, Ginny is pretty persuasive, too.
So the financial information we get breaks your group into applications management, consulting, and process. How do you view your business? What's going up? What's going down?
Yes. So as you say, it's around about 25% of IBM. It's 130,000 people, and in fact, I view it as maybe one of the best kept secrets in the world of professional services is that IBM has 130,000 person, consulting and process and IT capability under the covers here, alongside the sister organization, which is GTS, which is another, by the way, another 40% of IBM. Under the covers of GBS, really, there are three main things that I think that we do. The first is digital strategy and interactive, IX. And that's our ability to bring our industry skills, our view about where the market's going around digital, together with the fact that we have one of the world's largest creative agency networks, some 38 studios around the world, and a huge amount of skills in UX, in customer journeys, and how to align that, frankly, in a much more emergent way with our clients around strategy. That's really the front end of it. So digital strategy, the front end. The second piece then is around the fact that assuming you've got your digital strategy, the next thing you need to work on is what does it mean for my workflows and my processes? And so cognitive process transformation is the next sort of middle part of our model. And that's where we bring to bear all the AI skills, automation, IoT, blockchain, et cetera, to help transform processes and workflows for our clients and run them. So that's where our BPO business sits. It's also where all of our massive analytic and skill sets sit as well, our analytic capabilities. So we bring those together really in that area there. And it's the piece of the business that I say that connects into the Watson capabilities of IBM. It connects into our blockchain and industry platforms areas. And then the biggest part of the business is the third piece, which is the cloud application piece of the business. And that's everything to do with our implementation of S/4HANA, of Salesforce, of Workday, all the next generation enterprise applications. It's where we do our massive sort of cloud migration microservices work. It's increasing in that space. It's also where all of our AMS, ADMI work sits as well. So really, digital strategy, cognitive processes, and cloud applications. That's how I would describe the three main ways we run our business. And of course, in many cases, our clients seek us to actually leverage skills across those groups. So that's how we organize ourselves. But under the covers, we work across those.
on the cloud apps, can you give us a sense where you rank? Are you one, two, three, four, not in the top five with Salesforce and Workday and so forth?
Oh, no, we're certainly in the top one or two across all of those, actually. I mean, we go back and forth with the old place on a scale of our being the leading Salesforce implementation and certified group. We are very up there, very high up in terms of SAP's partner group as well. And we have been building, since we made an acquisition a couple of years ago, our Workday capabilities up. And again, we put ourselves in the first, in the top group of that as well. I mean, we really have a very broad-based set of skill sets that are around what I'd call next-generation SI and bringing those things together. And of course, we're finding that that's actually, frankly, a wave of change that's only really beginning again to grow, because for a long time, these solutions have mainly been finding their homes in what I call mid-tier organizations, but now most major global enterprises who are really our target marketplaces, the global 2000, they're really beginning to think about now how to go on that next wave of the journey, and we see that as being a massive opportunity for us.
So, I mean, we hear as we talk to people that digital is taken off, digital being the umbrella term, and it seems that the restraint to revenue growth has been on the supply or people side. And you talked about 130,000 people. What are you doing to attract, retain, reskill, and do you reskill them and lose them? How has that changed?
Well, I think first of all, we are in the same space that the whole world is in now around this whole how important talent is. And in fact, just last week, we launched a new proposition around IBM Talent and Transformation, which I'll maybe talk about later, which is really around helping our clients deal with the talent transformation agenda they're facing. Because in a world of digital and cognitive transformation, we believe the single thing that you've most got to get right is the people you wrap around the technology, not simply the technology itself. In my own space, yes, I have 130,000 people, and it's a continually moving picture in terms of the skills they need, what need to be relevant. Obviously, when I came on board, my first task 2.5 years ago was to find out what we had, to actually organize the people into those three groups that I talked about in terms of the people who can help with digital strategy, the people who can help with the processes, the people who can help with the applications, and then to go through that and continually work on where can I reskill someone who maybe was a great old-style SAP implementation person to being able to help with S/4HANA? Can people with success factor skills work on the Workday space? How many of the people who are maybe leveraging old-style or more historic tools in the analytics space, can they move into using the new AI tools, the data scientist capabilities? So actually, we have a very deliberate plan, which is around how we're continually training groups of people. I actually looked back and saw that of the 130,000 people in this last year, actually 140,000 have gained new skills, i.e. some have gained more than one new skill as part of their formal reskilling and certification inside the business. And I think that's going to be just an ongoing journey for us. Of course, also, we're looking to hire new people from the marketplace. We're bringing in a lot more people as early professional hires. People are starting their career with us, and again, we're very pleased to say that we're actually a very attractive place for young people to come and join, and so that's been something I've been reinforcing as well.
Now, your former shop is pretty aggressive on the acquisition front, constantly bringing in talent through niche acquisitions. Doesn't seem like IBM does that as much. Their deals seem to be bigger. Has the reduced level of acquisitions hurt your ability to execute?
No, clearly, I do watch with interest the old place hoovering up various other organizations. I think that what we've taken our view is that, first of all, we will do acquisitions, and in fact, we've done a number that have been pretty important to us. The Blue Wolf acquisition that we did completely launched our positioning around Salesforce and was a massive platform for the Meteorics one, as I say, was a massive step into the world of Workday for us. And the Resource Amirati one we did and other agencies we bought helped to build out us to be this one of the world's largest creative agency spaces. So we do it. We are up for people-based acquisitions. We've not been doing so much of late, partially because we've been really on this journey of working out what skills do we have? How much can we actually reskill within our own organization? Because a lot of it actually is around having an integrated way of working. So a big part of my focus has been about creating something called the IBM Way, which is a consistent way of methodology and tools and thinking and approach that straddles all those pieces of our business.
Mm-hmm.
And training in our people to have a common way of talking about problems and issues so they can team together more effectively. And that's been really probably more of a focus for me than necessarily bringing in lots of niche capabilities from around the world.
So the conversation I have with investors, it's really how fast is the new stuff, digital stuff coming on versus the old stuff coming off? And it parallels, I presume, for IBM as it does for IBM's clients, that they're facing the same transition. So where are we? Have we gotten past the point where growth should be, the legacy will not be a drag anymore? Or are we getting close to that point?
Well, you can see that within our business, I think some 65% of GBS in the last quarter was in the strategic imperative space, which is all of the new areas. I mean, we and Accenture, others, all describe the new in various different ways, but fundamentally it's all of the digital, the cloud, the analytics, the AI, all those spaces. And you know, for us now, that represents, you know, some two-thirds of our business are now in those spaces and growing and continuing to grow into that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's going to continue to be a journey we'll go on, and particularly actually as the piece that's probably been least affected so far, which has been our ADMI AMS space, as that becomes more and more cloudified and cloud-centric, you know, that will bleed into that area as well. And indeed, you know, we're helping our clients now very much deal with this dual journey. And in fact, we've got kind of two ideas that really underpin that. The first is what we call the garage capability we're bringing, which is the ability that we have to bring together these new technologies, apply them to solving the critical pain points our clients are facing. They want to win in their supply chain. They want to be the best claims processor. They want to be the best sales and marketing organization. Our garage methodology allows us to inject these new technologies in a way that allows them to build the building blocks of the future in a very, very structured but also fast and agile way. So it's all about agile design thinking, but also with a sense of purpose. We ally that with our factory model, which is a factory model that allows us to work through the legacy application worlds our clients are in, start to expose those legacy applications as microservices and APIs, which can be leveraged by the new as well, and start to bring the old and the new together, obviously in a future state. And all the time, you know, leveraging kind of multi-cloud environments as, if you like, the middleware that allows us to transmit things across that space. So I think I will say again, in terms of where are most companies on that journey, they're still probably in the 20% space, with the other 80% still to go. And that, you know, I think, for me generally, I believe that all organizations, particularly big enterprises, are on the cusp of their next wave of transformation. And the next 5 and 10 years are going to be just massive.
So AWS, a lot of chatter about it yesterday, a big event they had last week. How is IBM's hybrid cloud approach resonating with the clients? How much battle you're doing against the AWS approach or Azure approach? Is it resonating?
Well, first of all, in terms of GBS and GTS, you know, the large services part of IBM, we work across a multi-cloud environment all the time. We already are one of, you know, AWS's main big partners. We're a big partner for Azure as well. I mean, we implement across all cloud environments. Obviously, we also leverage the fact that we know best, you know, the IBM private cloud and public cloud environments. I will say that for our enterprise clients, the IBM public cloud positioning has been particularly resonant and powerful because that IBM private cloud ability to actually, in many ways, protect core data, give people a comfort that the processes that need to be kept inside the connected to the business tightly in a private cloud, we found that to be very resonant. And also the fact that that's leveraging very strongly these open Kubernetes container technologies has also been resonating massively, because on this journey of migration, everyone's trying to make sure they can migrate safely, but also not just migrate once, but think about where things might go over time. And of course, you know, that also, you know, leads into, you know, the rationale that sits behind the Red Hat mm-hmm. acquisition that we've done, which is really an amplification of our position around the fact that we see ourselves as helping clients with this overall journey they're going to go on to the clouds, the fact that they're going to, as they underpin their broader business transformation with new agile applications and systems that are going to be fundamentally cloud-enabled in a multi-cloud world, then our access to the tools, the technology, the know-how, and the credibility of the open model that, that Red Hat brings just allows us, particularly in the services side, and by the way, we believe that of the, you know, the $1 trillion marketplace in cloud over the next 3 years, about half of it is going to be in services. This gives us just massive further credibility to our ability to say we can help you go on that journey regardless of the clouds you're going to have different parts of your application suite end up on.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned Red Hat because I'm sure nobody in the room is interested in the topic. But
I thought I'd get it in first.
So we'll pass over how much you paid for it. But the question is, did you have to own it? Could you have gotten the benefit from Red Hat in a partnership format as opposed, I mean, why do you need to own Red Hat?
Well, first of all, we obviously or did have a, do have a partnership with them already. And in fact, our GTS business in particular has a very, very large footprint of working very, excuse me, very closely with them. I think that from our perspective, the fact was that by owning them, first of all, you know, clearly we gain, you know, significantly more, even greater access to their tools, to their development, to where their business is going over the long term. We are able to embed their skills and their methodology, you know, into our teams and our people in a way that, you know, it's frankly goes far beyond, you know, a normal partnership model. And also, as we recognize that this world of hybrid multi-cloud is going to be the future, you know, this is a very strong and clear statement from us that we are in that game and we're in that game to win. And very much that was fundamentally at the heart of the thinking here. So there's a number of ways this works out. It obviously, very importantly, does massively empower our services businesses, but of course it will also act as an on-ramp and a way that our own cloud and other clouds will be also brought into these multi-cloud architectures. So we see, you know, both the horizontal opportunity and the vertical opportunity in our business to leverage this acquisition.
I'm going to ask another question, but if anybody needs, Stacy's walking around with a mic, so if you're thinking of a question, so get ready. A lot of people I talk to think that GBS is sort of the swing factor in the story, and you're sort of bottoming out here fundamentally. Awards have been a little uneven. How do we translate awards to revenue? How do we think about margins? Are there more margin to come? Are you still in a heavy investment mode, you know, resetting workforce mode?
Well, as you've seen over the past period, we've returned to growth in GBS. And we posted a couple of good quarters in terms of significant margin expansion. You know, certainly above what I would consider to be sort of regular levels of margin expansion over this last couple of quarters. And that's been a combination really of the shift in the mix of our work, the fact that we are doing more high value work. You've seen the growth in our consulting. You're up 7% in the last quarter, and that means this digital, you know, front end, more higher value services are becoming a bigger part of our mix. We're obviously also have been doing a lot to make sure that we reshape the teams so that we're able to deliver our teams in pyramids that are ways that we make money. And a professional services organization makes money by bringing the right mix of levels of people to bear around the different things that we try to do. And we have very much more strongly aligned that. And we believe the combination of that continuing moving into higher value areas, and there's still much more that we can do there. The fact that we can still continue to drive more out of our pyramids and our efficiencies, leveraging automation, leveraging AI itself as a capability to help us get the right people in the right place. Now, we still see ongoing opportunity for margin expansion looking forward in the GBS business. The other thing I'd say, obviously, is that we do see ourselves playing a clearer and clearer role as the front end of the overall IBM story. The fact that we are the carriers of the industry narrative, the transformational stories that our clients are going on, that we can help our clients put together the full journey and the plan under which the other parts of IBM are able to then flourish. So that is very much, you know, for me, I had two jobs. One was to get GBS to be healthier in its own right, and secondly, to make sure it's clearly playing its role at the front end of the overall business.
Questions? Nope. Oh, there we go.
First question is, you're in a great position talking to CEOs, CIOs. 2018 has been a great year from an overall spending perspective, lots of tailwinds. A lot of companies are in their budgeting process right now for 2019. Can you just share, given some of the crosswinds that are obvious in the marketplace, what spending intentions, what investment intentions look like for next year, given the above?
Yes, it's a really interesting time insofar as, clearly, as you say, there appear to be a number of potential crosswinds out there that could be causing people to have concerns. I will say that all the conversations that I'm having are still very much in this cusp of transformation, we've got to get on and do something meaningful space right now. That in fact, either that's because people believe they've got to move to try and win and get ahead of things before anything might happen down the track. But I would say at the moment, a very strong sense of people thinking, I've probably been in five conversations in the last 10 days with major leaders of major companies, and every single one of them is thinking big about the fact they want to build these platforms that are going to be the basis of their competitive advantage in the future. Now, those platforms they want to build for the future do need to have their costs restructured underneath them to make them more resilient to maybe issues in the future. But they're also trying to combine this idea of being more better experienced, more digitally connected, more leveraging the expertise of their business while also taking advantage of technology to take out cost. And I think you're going to see people continually to embark on these major transformation programs, and at the same time trying to deal with this legacy new problem that they've got, and trying as fast as possible take advantage of new cloud-based technologies to deal with TCO, but more importantly, just create the agility to move in what may be a more volatile picture in the future.
And then just to follow up, if at some point in the next few years does become a much more difficult or more difficult environment, which technologies and strategies have the TCO ROI proposition that when the CFO now has to sign off more frequently or looks more aggressively, it's there? And which of the buzzwords, perhaps it's not quite there yet, and there'll be more variability and discretion?
Yeah, I think it is really interesting. And I think that what we are seeing, though, is that all of these technologies are moving to a place where they are significantly more able to play in prime time than they have before. We are moving from the world of 1,000 proof of concepts around the edges of our processes, around the edges of our company, into people saying, no, I want to apply these technologies. Also, they're being applied, frankly, together. So you don't see AI attacking a process, say a supply chain for a client, without them looking at how automation generally is going to be applied. RPA is going to play into the mix there as well. You start to then say, I'm doing the AI and the automation around my, say, insurance claims process, I actually want to think about, can I use IoT smartly at the front end of it more completely? And by the way, when I want to actually get into a transaction with the players, can blockchain now start to be the transmission mechanism of that contract? And I think we're going to start to see these things coming. We are starting to see these things coming together, frankly, more with each other in combination to make meaningful, and by meaningful I mean 50-60% plus differences to either the cost base or indeed the value add that could be added on top of that by people being able to work more smartly. So I think we're ready for prime time around a lot of this stuff. Clearly, there are some areas which will take a little bit longer to bed in, and some industries will find things more resonant earlier. But that's our overall point of view, and it really plays through super powerfully at this workflow transformation level. As you start to look at any workflow at any company that's got tens of thousands of people in it, huge amounts of costs tied up in it, how that's going to move, how you can move it, how you can enable those people to be more effective and or take out cost, just a huge opportunity.
So we have about a minute left. I'm going to throw out some current themes, and I can't do it in cricket, so I'm going to ask you to do it in baseball terms. The big one that's been talked about a lot recently is blockchain. Where are we inning-wise in blockchain? And I know IBM makes a lot of noise around that topic.
Yes, having been in the U.S. now for 2.5 years, I'm just about understanding baseball now. I'm not saying I'm enjoying it yet, but I'm just about understanding it. I would say we're somewhere towards the start of the second inning, actually, is my personal view on blockchain. I mean, there's actually a lot of more substantive stuff going on around this around the world. I mean, we are now involved with some 400 networks. Some of them are now major scale networks, like the WeTrade network, which has 12 banks in Europe that we're at the center of, that's acting across trade finance. The network we've created alongside Maersk and the other carriers around allowing for global trade to start to move across in a seamless way. The network we've created with Walmart to connect into food safety and security, which, you know, they, even before this latest Remain issue, they had asked for all their suppliers in the Greenleaf variety to come onto their blockchain for safe provenance around the world. So we're starting to see that the blockchain, I think, move again from being a bit of a buzzword. And I was at Davos last year, and it was there were two words that were buzzwords at Davos, which were, one was Trump and one was blockchain last year. I'm interested to see what it'll be this coming time around. I suspect that, but blockchain is now moving into people really understanding what they can do with the technology and peeling it away from the cryptocurrency conversation into, know the distributed ledger for transactions that matter in a permissioned way. And I think we've only begun to see how things like identity starts to be leveraged through the use of blockchain technology as a next wave. And maybe that one's perhaps closer to the first inning.
Well, we're out of time, but I hope the people that do one-on-ones ask you about Watson AI, RPA, IoT, all great, interesting topics that I know you're very involved with. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ed. Cheers. Thank you.